So far this summer, the two biggest movies at the box office have been Jurassic World and Inside Out, and there's one thing in common for both pictures, a score from Michael Giacchino, and he's on the line with us right now. Thanks a lot for talking with us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So has there been a sudden benefit for you having put music to the top films in the world? I mean, like more job offers? Is it easier to get dinner reservations?
You know, I wish the dinner reservation thing were true. That'd actually be better. But no, it's the same old thing. I mean, you know, the way I work is I generally work with people that I know, and I don't go outside of that circle too often. I'll usually stick with, if you look at my films that I've worked on, you know, several with Brad Bird, a couple with Pete Docter, a lot with JJ. I mean, it's the same sort of crews over and over. And we're all friends, and it makes it more fun to work with people that you know and you like. There's a secondhand language you already have in place. You know, when you go and work with new people, there's always that you're rolling the dice, you know. Now, but again, Colin I had never worked with before, and Colin Trevorrow directed Jurassic World. But I knew he was a good friend of Brad Bird, so, you know, that was a connection there. So it always has to be, for me anyway, some sort of, I need to be able to suss people out somehow.
Well, there's already a connection with you and the Jurassic World, because that's pretty much where you got your start in the business, wasn't it, with the Jurassic Park video games way back when?
Yeah, no, Steven Spielberg gave me that first shot years ago, and so it was really nice to kind of come full circle, and working on Jurassic World was sort of like coming home in a way, because it was the thing that got me started in this crazy business.
So you're doing pretty well in this crazy business, too. The top two movies in the country right now, both of them scored by you. How did you arrange to do that?
I would have normally liked to have had them spread out a little more, because it was this year it ended up being Jupiter Ascending, Tomorrowland, Inside Out, and then Jurassic World, just boom, 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 right after one after another, basically. And that's really hard to do. Now, luckily, like I said, all of the directors knew each other, so they were very happy to kind of schedule it so that I didn't, you know, perish during the process. But it was a lot of scheduling and a lot of looking forward, and as does happen many times with film, when you're making a movie, the schedule changes constantly. So you may think you're going to be recorded in April. Next thing you know, you're recording it, you know, 4 months earlier or 4 months later. You know, so everyone did their best to kind of keep things in sync and literally work within a breath of what we wanted it to be, because I would jump off of one and go right into the next, and then into the next, and then into the next. And it's, you know, it was insane. It was probably the busiest I think I've ever been in one time period, but it was also a lot of fun.
Now, you mentioned those four movies that have all come out this year. I'm curious about the process, because they're different in so many ways. And we were talking one movie that's totally animated. The other couple of movies you've got very much in the CGI. Does that affect the way that you write for the movies?
You know, for me, it's all about the story and the characters. And, you know, the characters can be animated or they can be live people that we know. But when you think about it, Ratatouille, there's this rat who wants to cook. There's, in Star Trek, you have, you know, Chris Pine, who was Captain Kirk. There's nothing more real about him than there is that rat. They're both made up. The medium is different. You have live action or you have animation. The medium is very different. But the actual job I have to do remains the same, which is to look at that character, think about them, find out what they want or what they're feeling, and go after that. So again, that's the same whether it's a rat or a starship commander.
Now, we should also mention, too, that we're talking about the movies you've done. You've also done a lot of work for television as well. And again, you mentioned some of the people you've worked with, like J.J. Abrams. You seem to be his in-house composer for all these projects.
Yeah, we sort of grew up in the business together. When he played the video games that I had worked on, you know, Medal of Honor, The Lost World, those things, and he really liked the music, so he asked me to then work with him in television, and we did Alias first. That was great. You know, we did a bunch of seasons of that, and then Lost, of course, came. And that was, for me, a really special experience working on Lost. I loved it. It's probably one of the most fun things I ever got to work on. But then from there, again, we went into movies together as well, and around the same time as when I started doing films with Brad Bird, we were all sort of kind of coming up together, and it was a really fun, you know, it's a lot like when you're a kid and you have your group of friends that you like to do things with. That's what it feels like for me.
Now, one of the other collaborations you've done over the years is working with Pixar. And I kind of figure you're like second to John Ratzenberger for being in with Pixar movies.
When you count the shorts that I've worked on and the films I've worked on, there is quite a bit of them compared to the output total that they've done. So I've been really lucky and really blessed and happy to be able to be a part of that company in such a big way, because I started my career working in the publicity department at Disney, and to be doing so much work still with that company, it feels great. It's sort of like being able to continue to work with the people that I worked with when I grew up and just sort of be a part of this strange, crazy legacy that is Disney.
I also read that you, well, I saw, like, in Tomorrowland, I'm one of those people who looks at credits. Yeah, you know where I'm going here. I'm looking at the credits. It's like, wait a minute, he's in the movie as well. You had a part in that one.
I did. I had a small part. I played a ticket taker at the World's Fair, the guy who was sort of manning the boats at the 64 World's Fair, a small world ride. So I'm there, and I have, one line. But I like to think it's a very important line.
You know, and it's interesting, too, that for the most part, people don't even think about the scores. One of those things that's in the background, but, you know, people like John Williams have made it a big, big part of movie making anymore. And you seem to be on a track to do that yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up listening to John and Jerry Goldsmith and Max Steiner and these guys who were just larger than life musical characters. And I always admired them. And what I loved what they did was they created a soundscape that you could listen to and relive the movie while you listened to it. You know, because growing up, there was no way to rewatch a movie once you left the theater. Once you left the theater, you were on your own to either remember it as best you can or go find the soundtrack, listen to it, and go, oh, yeah, that's when Indy was on the truck, you know, chasing after the Ark. Those are the things that I did as a kid. I consistently listened to film scores. I listened to classical music and also made up my own sort of stories in my head. It was just, music was a huge part of my upbringing. And my dad had this incredible record collection with all kinds of music, from jazz to Latin to mariachi to everything you could imagine. It was in there. So it was fun for me to just explore all that while I was growing up.
Well, you said the word incredible, and that was the first time I noticed your name on a movie was after The Incredibles. And I remember when I saw the movie and then I saw your name, I was kind of disappointed because I wanted John Barry to have written part of that score.
Well, I think the film sort of, it tips its hat to that era, you know, that era of orchestral jazz where you could play jazz music in a big orchestral way. You know, John Barry did it so brilliantly in James Bond. Henry Mancini did it incredibly in, you know, the Pink Panther movies and many other things he did. But these guys were really solid jazz writers, you know. And at that time, it was just commonplace. That was the type of score a film like that would get, you know. Nowadays, you would never hear that sort of a score. But the film, The Incredibles, sort of tips its hat to that era in a lot of different areas, whether it be in character design, in set design, and how the music is written as well.
And something else that you are famous for, or maybe notorious for, is coming up with very interesting titles for your film cues.
Yeah, sometimes it's more infamous. I mean, a lot of the message boards and the people who are soundtrack fans get very upset about that at times. But, you know, the truth is you spend a lot of hours in a room alone when you're doing what I do. And whatever you can do to make the time, you know, sort of more fun or just sort of more interesting, you do it. So my music editors and I usually have a sort of contest.
Yeah, I'm looking at Jurassic World has the teeth degree, and as a Jurassic World turns. I think the biggest pun here was for Tomorrowland, where you've got what an Eiffel.
Yes. And, you know, we have very sort of stringent rules about them. They can't just be a pun for a pun's sake. They actually have to refer to what's happening in the film, you know, itself. And it has to refer somehow to the story or what's going on in the story. It can't just be done as a joke sake. So we have these crazy sort of little contests, I guess, about it. And then whoever wins at the end of the film wins. And, you know, it's just for fun.
So you seem to be having a whole lot of fun. What's coming up next for you? And what's, we got another Star Trek movie next year. What else are we going to hear from you?
Well, I haven't even talked to them about that yet. I pretty much came off these films and said, you know what, I'm just going to take a break for a while because it's been such an incredibly busy year. So right now, all I have is to clean the garage and to do some landscaping in the backyard, and that's what I'm focusing on.
So it's okay that J.J. Abrams got John Williams to do the next Star Wars movie instead of you?
Oh, my God, it's more than okay. And I was, you know, early on, talked to J.J. about that and felt like, you know, nobody, including me, wants to go to the Star Wars movie and not hear John's music, you know? I'm so happy he's doing it. I hope he does all three of the trilogy, you know, that they're completing. I hope, because John, again, also from being a huge supporter and friend to me over the years, I'm a huge fan of his, and I want to hear what he has to say. So I can't wait.
Well, I appreciate you talking with us and telling us about what you've been up to. We really enjoyed your music, not just this past summer, but over the past few years. And just like to say thank you for thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
We've been speaking with Michael Giacchino, the screen composer. He's doing Jurassic World, Inside Out, so many movies you've seen in the theaters over the years. Thanks again.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
You can hear the 2009 Star Trek film score written by Michael Giacchino at a special presentation of the 2009 Star Trek film by the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra. The Pops will perform a live sync with the film at the Taft Theater on Saturday, July 18th. Conductor Constantine Katsopoulos will lead the orchestra for this performance. You'll find a link for more information at WVXU.org. I'm Frank Johnson.